Now it is my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker, Reyes. Please offer him a warm valley welcome.
Hey, everybody. I don't like mics. My name is Reyes. I am an alcoholic. And my sobriety date's the 5th of February, 1983. At 10 a.m. that morning, I took my last drink. I want to thank, Bill's not here tonight, but I want to thank him for asking me to come and share a little bit about my story, because you can only say so much in 30 minutes. And like I told some of my friends earlier, I like to, preference everything. Like I filter myself more nowadays than I did when I was first introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I used to use my bad behavior to keep people away from me. And when I found out that this is an amazing program of for me, it's been love and tolerance, and that came about from not only working and living the steps of this program, but applying the traditions to my life. And that's something that I like to talk about in my story. So just briefly, that experience, strength, and hope. Again, like I said, I filter my my experience, because what I've done in my time wasn't stuff that a lot of people are comfortable with, and it bothers me to even talk about it at times. This is not something that I grew up to be in front of a bunch of people, and something I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, that this isn't group therapy, and you don't need all know my shit. I can just keep it as general as possible, but to where we can relate. And like I said, when I was growing up in New Mexico and Texas area, I bring this up because part of the message here is about the spiritual aspect of this program. Where I grew up, I'm Mezcalero, Two Spirits. I'm a gay Two Spirits fan. And where I grew up, we were not allowed, and it was one of the unwritten rules at that time. This is before civil rights and so forth, and so I want to talk about this a little bit, why it was so difficult for me to stay in these rooms and to get the blessings that I have today. But we were not allowed to talk to white people. I didn't know what a black person looked like until I came to California. It was a very tough time, and I grew up in an area where we didn't know, we were like money poor, but not poor in other resources. We were well fed and taken care of, and we had our medicines and so forth like that. When the civil rights stuff started in the 60s, by then I already had it in my head that laws didn't apply to me, and that was part of my little renegade lifestyle when I was a young man, because laws didn't apply. When they forced us to go to church, we sat in the back of the church, and the white people sat in the front, and it was just normal. That was just the normal stuff that I dealt with. And I talk about this to some people, and I've come to terms, I understand what this is about. I was very, I wouldn't say anti big white guy or not. I was always in fights and stuff, but there was years in this program before I realized why I didn't like tall white guys. Well, the preacher would always be slamming on the pulpit and pointing us in the back of the church and calling us heathens, and I didn't know what that meant. Just like they were going to hell, and I had no clue what that was about. I just felt, God, I'm going to hell, so I might as well take everybody with me, I guess. But so what it ended up being was I had this horrible inside thought, whatever, revulsion to tall white men. So when I was in bars, I was a bar fighter. I really was. And I would, if you were a tall white guy and you walked into my bar, it was going to be on, And I was sharing with somebody earlier that part of my story was there were times I went to jail and they went to the hospital, And I was also one of my I don't like talking about it, but one of the times I almost killed somebody, and in New Mexico, and I'm not gonna go and justify it or whatever. It was a barroom fight, and when you hear a shotgun being behind the bar, Bart with the bartender, you know, pointed it at us to get at, take it outside and stuff like that. And I've been shot at and knife fights and all this stuff where, because all I want to do is have fun. You know, I just want to go out and have fun. And I talk about the fact, you know, the 70s, because I'm 59 now. I was 25 when I had the opportunity to get clean and sober. And it's not only just alcohol. I was addicted to more. A lot of drugs were part of my story. And if someone says, oh, you can't talk about drugs, well, Bill Wilson talked about drugs and LSD and so forth. And I did everything but needles. My people don't agree, but we don't do needles other than piercing our ears. I pierced my nipple once, but that was funny. That was to hang my car keys on it so I wouldn't lose them. I actually did. Crazy shit that I did, you know. That was in the 70s. And I always, the other thing was about the drug part, I didn't like to identify myself as an addict. Because I didn't like cocaine, even though I freebased cocaine in the early 80s. But I only did that so I could drink more. And, you know, I wouldn't miss out on whatever was going on, you know. But I didn't like cocaine. My jaws would hurt. Just like, after a few days, it's like, I need a rest, you know. So I wasn't an addict, you know, but I really did. I love my 151. Just a little bit of the reasons, because it says in the big book about seeking outside help, and I've done that, and I've gone to other programs, Adult Children of Alcoholics, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. I'm really happy and proud of the meeting that we started here in Visalia last year, the Crystal Meth Anonymous on Monday night from 6 to 7 downtown. It's a men's meeting. It's very healing for me. But I'm always striving to do better for myself, and that's the responsibility I have today to even be here to share a little bit about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. And what happened was, I'm a survivor of sexual abuse and abuse as a kid. So when I was going to church and going, you know, they were telling us we were bad kids, I just thought I was a bad kid, that God hated me, and those things that were happening to me as a young man, I deserved it. And no one deserves to hurt a child. And I'm a survivor of that, and that's something that I had to as an adult process, and thank God I had loving people in my life that helped me through that. But that's another reason I drank, so I wouldn't feel. I started having blackouts before I started having alcoholic blackouts. I was having emotional blackouts to just zone out from what was being done to me. And only people who have endured that understand that. And I didn't know what blackouts were. I just thought I was crazy, you know, because I would had those times like coming to and like, who are you and where are we, you know. I always just had good intentions to go out and have fun. I just wanted to have fun. I wanted to drink and get laid and just have fun. You know, that in the 70s it was about, you know, I had 29-inch waist, polyester pants, and a silk shirt with holes in it from the pot that I was smoking and shit, and no underwear, and just wild, you know. And all I wanted to do was disco dance and drink and have fun. And it would just inevitably, after a couple of days, you know, end up in Oregon. I was telling somebody the other day when I came to in Barstow twice. Because I wanted to go someplace. You know, I wanted to be any place other than where I am. And that's not what it's like today. And I get that today. I was uncomfortable with myself. What ended up happening, and I only got, and I did, I only had 3 DUIs. That's only, but for years, I was a blackout drunk driver. And I always talk about being a menace to society. Those were just the DUIs, the 502s. I was mentioning someone earlier. My first one was a $500 fine, and I remember that one. And I scribbled out a check, and I thought, stupid people are taking my check. You know, they took my check to get me out of jail. I wrote a $500 check. My bank covered it, of course, but I was overdrawn, like usually in my life. But you know, I look back about that stuff. I go, wow, you know. And the other times when I was locked up is because of fighting, and I go to jail, and they go to the hospital. One time I went to the hospital because I broke my hand in a fight. It just was awful. It just wasn't fun toward the end. But I didn't know how to stop. I did not know how to live without my 151. I almost kicked the guy's ass one time because he lit my drink on fire. You know, I mean, I made him buy me two drinks, and I think I took him home. I'm not sure, but I just remember just crazy shit. You know, crazy shit to go in my life. You know, I wasn't right. You know. What ended up, again, like I said, what happened was the alcohol had, and the way I drank, and if anyone understands about eating disorders, I ended up with an eating disorder because I didn't have the money to drink the way I needed to drink. So I figured out, hey, if I ate, I didn't want to barf, and I didn't want to lose, you know, good booze. So, hey, I just won't eat, you know. So I ended up with an eating disorder in my last several years of my drinking, and that was something I had to deal with in early recovery, and it was very difficult. Like I said, I was addicted to other things, and I had other issues. Alcohol is but a symptom of my problems that I've had in my life, and I get that today. At the very beginning, when I was brought into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was sharing this earlier. Alcoholics Anonymous is different. I don't like saying that, but it is. It's different today. There weren't rooms of people of color. There weren't rooms with different sexual orientations. You know, 34 years ago, I was 25 years of age, and they were all older white people in my original home group. And I look back, and they were about 30. You know, I thought they were old white people, you know, and how are they going to help me? They don't know anything about me. So I would use my sexuality to keep them away, and I'd talk about women coming and pressing their breasts on me like, oh, like torture. It was just horrible, you know. Like, God, I just hated that. And I don't know if they knew that or not. I don't know, but I was very uncomfortable, even just not drinking, you know. When I got sentenced, the 5th of January, 1983 is the last time I was sitting in front of a judge, actually, and I was looking at 5 to 7 years that time, and he gave me a choice, either you go to a treatment program or you do this time. And it took me about a month to make up my mind, whatever freaking what was left of my mind at that time. And I can honestly say that on the 5th of February, by 10 a.m., that last 30 minutes, I talk about being reduced to it was a tall bud, and I didn't like, I don't know where it even came from, I didn't like drinking beer, but it was the longest drink that I remember drinking, and it took me 30 minutes to drink that bud. But not only the time frame of that, it was like drinking air. I'm one of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that I hear other people that where alcohol truly did stop working for me. I couldn't smell it. I couldn't taste it. It had no longer had an effect on me. I don't know if that was a God that I didn't believe in, removing that obsession or whatever at that time. I don't know. All I know is that it was just like drinking air. And then I was left with me. I called my friend, because I never even had the opportunity to go through withdrawals, and I didn't know what they were. And I went through two sets of withdrawals, serious ones. And I detoxed at my home and also in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the other thing. I don't see that nowadays. I don't see people coming into the rooms like myself and countless other men and women at that time. And I used to see the white people with these red blotches on their faces coming in, these red noses and stuff, and bloating and shit, you know. And I'd see them getting better. Visually, I could see them getting better, and I thought, why am I still fucked up? You know, I couldn't see myself getting better because I wouldn't look in the mirror. I had so much shame and guilt, and because I had no way of stuffing the emotions that I had stuffed for so many years. And I wouldn't look in the mirror, even when I was shaving or something. I wouldn't look in the mirror. I was a mess. I was a mess, and I you know, you guys had taken away my medicine. When I was And I did start, because back then, if you're a newcomer, you weren't, the meeting I went through anyway, they wouldn't allow newcomers to talk. You can announce yourself, and that was it. Because they tell us, you can't tell us a different way to get drunk or how to stay sober. You need to shut up and listen to us. And they were mean to me and hurt my one baby-ass feeling, you know. And I'd sit there, and these women would yell at me at times, and I would think, and I was not nice. And I would, in my head, I would think, you know, I'd snap that bitch's neck, you know. I would think these things, you know, that how dare you talk to me? Like, you don't know enough. I mean, I was such a mess. I really was. But they cared enough to, you know, keep welcoming me back and you know, and hugging me and making me uncomfortable. Oh, my God. But I ended up, when I did start sharing, I did not know how to be appropriate in these rooms. You know, I thought everybody was a man whore, you know, and did the things that I did. Because I drank for a variety of reasons, but I never had the money to pay for it. So I did things that were immoral and a lot of other stuff. And something I mentioned recently, you know, the statute of limitations, some of my shit's gone right, so I can talk about it a little more, but I still don't, you know. But I did a lot of stuff that wasn't nice. I take things because I figured, hey, you can replace it, you know. I need it. I need it to drink. I hurt a lot of people, and I hurt myself. And I don't have to do that today. And you don't. It bothers me right now to even talk about it. It really does. I really hurt a lot of people. People that cared about me, you know. And I really just wanted someone to love me. But the word love, to me, meant emotional and physical pain because of what I endured as a kid. And I hadn't had treatment yet for that. And alcohol and drugs were what keeping in me together, you know, so I didn't unwrap. And, you know, I attempted suicide three times. I overdosed a couple of times because of my drugs and alcohol. I mean, by accident, you know. And that wasn't fun, coming to it after a couple of days in bed, you know. And it's not pretty if you're lying in a bed for a couple of days and you know, you have to go to the bathroom or vomit. It's amazing that I didn't burn my, you know, apartment down or drown in my fluids. It was not, you know, it stuck to the sheets and stuff. It was just not pretty. It was no longer pretty. And there's a lot of stuff that went on with my using and so forth. But what I found when I was in Alcoholics Anonymous and started sharing, people would tell me, they said, oh, you know, they would like to hit my legs. Oh, you really need to get a sponsor and talk about that outside the meetings. I thought this was group therapy. I thought everybody did what I did. Because it says, you know, about seeking lower companionship. Well, that's all I knew. The people that I ran with were very low companionships. And I did a lot of immoral things and unnatural stuff, and it was okay because everybody else was doing it. I didn't know there were people that were nice. I didn't associate with them. I didn't find them until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and started putting a life together by cleaning up the wreckage of my past. That part about, you know, people tell me you need to get a spot. I said, and here it is. I had it back in my head. Don't ask white people for anything. That was what was beat into us. And they used to beat us so we wouldn't cry. That was one of the things, you know, so we couldn't feel those emotions. And that's something I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's okay to, if you're a man, you can cry in here. You can laugh, you know. It says in the book, at times people are astonished that, you know, we laugh at people's misfortunes or whatever it is in the book, you know. And it's true because I can relate. I have empathy for other people who've done that. Crazy stuff and survived behavior tied into drinking, you know, and the lack of respect, not only for myself, but for women. And women, you know, need all of our respect. You know, we believe in my people that they bring forth life, and women deserve all our respect. You know, and I had no self-respect, so how could I respect you? But I have that today, you know. And when I ended up finally asking my first sponsor, Bill Moore, to be my sponsor. And there's a whole process with that, but I won't get into that. It takes a little time. But he was a big white guy in leather. I picked him because I figured, oh, he could probably handle my ass, you know, yeah, you know. And he got me into service. And that's what I want to talk about, my experience early on in Alcoholics Anonymous, what was instilled in me and things, the practices that I have even to this day about being committed to a program of recovery, about giving back one day at a time, staying connected to my my Creator. Praying to a God I didn't believe at that time because I hadn't worked the steps. I didn't understand the spiritual principles and how they would apply to me because I was such a bad person and I didn't deserve to be loved by anyone. And my first commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a greeter. Oh, God, I hated that. Women come up pressing their boobs on me and like, ugh. But that was my commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous. That was after, oh, it was my drudge. Oh, God, I'm going to have to do this. But I did it. And from that, you know, I of course I had my home group, I had my sponsor, we get together and he was guiding me through the steps and every step had a spiritual principle and we'd read a tradition and back and forth. But early on, and this is my saving grace, and this is something I suggest to countless people, you know, early on it was suggested to me to attend a book study. So I went to a book study meeting in Fresno, and luckily for me, with the grace of God, they were talking about the traditions. And I like to bring this up because they were talking about tradition 3, which stated the only requirement for AA membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. And when people were sharing about it and talking about it, I go, oh. And I did. I really did want to stop drinking. So I figured, you can't kick me out. I really thought if you found out who I was and what things I had done, that you would kick me out of this club, you know? And I figured, so I was like, oh, I can go back and tell them you can't kick me out. They just looked at me like I was crazy. Like, they had no intention of kicking me out. They were the ones welcoming me in. They wanted me. I was no longer a menace to society as long as I was in Alcoholics Anonymous and staying clean and sober. And then as I continued learning more about the traditions, when tradition 10 came around, about we had no opinion outside issues, that really solidified me staying in these rooms. Because coming from a prejudiced time, there's so many young people here, you don't realize what people of color of different sexual orientations, what we had to deal with in the 60s and 70s. And if you were a homosexual, you were automatically branded a pedophile and a deviant, all these horrible things. You couldn't get a job, they kicked out of an apartment. It was just a really scary, horrible time. You know, and that's not, and it's just the misconception at that time. You know, so I was always, and that was one of the reasons I was a fighter. I was always fighting in my life. I was fighting for my life. Because I'm not that person. I'm a bad person on the streets because I'm a blackout drunk driver. I'm a bad person if you try and light my 151 on fire. You know, I can be a bad person in a lot of ways. You know, I'm a bad person if you have, you know, your purse is there or you leave your wallet, you know. Yeah, I could be a bad person because I had to drink. And now what I've learned to do is I know how to live. And what it was instilled in me by my sponsor was, like I said, daily living. And they didn't like that phrase, one day at a time. Like, what the hell is that? What's happening Saturday night, you know? Because I wasn't comfortable with myself. I was not comfortable with myself. So I started working the steps and applying the spiritual principles to my life. I got honest with another human being. I had so many breakthroughs for someone like me. 34 years, 30, what was, yeah, it was a little over 34 years ago. When I started getting honest with Bill Moore. And that man was so loving. And I made him uncomfortable with some of the stuff. Because I did. I thought everybody did what I did. Yeah, the ones that I ran with. And I made him cringe as big. I'd be reading him doing my fifth step with him. And I did those columns. And he had told me that on that part, the fourth column, he says, you know, my part. He says, we're going to find out, because I put on pissed off, I'm angry, what it affected. He says, we're going to find out what you're afraid of. And that pissed me off when he told me that, because you don't know me. I'm not afraid of anything. You know, I've been shot at. That's stupid stuff. You know, I was thinking, you don't know what I've been through. But he helped me understand things. He helped me understand the word ignorant. I remember he was calling me, he said I was ignorant one time, and it pissed me off, you know. And he goes, that's not a bad thing. I just mean you haven't been taught. You know, if you keep doing it, once you're taught something, you go back, revert back to the stuff, then you're being stupid, you know. If you don't want to do the time, don't do the crime, you know, all those things. You know, I go, oh, okay, so I'm ignorant, and that's a good thing. Start over. No.
Yay!
No. I have a few minutes left. What happens was that, you got it. I think you got it.
No.
When that's fine. When he identified, helped me identify the fear in my life, and then how to deal with that. And those spiritual principles, again, was what saved my life, because I've learned over the time of working my steps and building that spiritual fire within me. Now I can say the faith within me is greater than the fear before me today, because fear or things were uncomfortable in my life would paralyze me. I'm just like contempt prior investigation. I love that. That was one of my great go-tos, you know. No. Real quickly, so even when Bill asked me to come and speak, I was thinking, nope, not going to do it. But I thought about my last sponsor and countless others. And I need to speak up for the men and women who can't be here because they died of this disease. I have a couple of friends of mine right now in prison. But for the grace of God, there go I, you know. And now I can feel those emotions, you know. And I have to, you know, but yeah, I don't have to feel them alone. I have a core group of men and women in my life. There's several of them here tonight. That know everything about me. I don't need to be a secret. I don't need to be that bad guy. I don't need to hurt people to make me feel better. And it is hard at times, you know, because I didn't want to live this long and lose so many friends. I can't even tell you, I couldn't even guess how many men and women who I know personally were good people that put a gun to their head. My cousin, a couple years, put a gun to his head. I had two friends of mine hang themselves. I had friends of mine overdose. I had friends of mine murdered. Back in the 70s, it was like open season on gays in the parking lot. I mean, in Fresno. I mean, and people didn't care. You didn't see it in the paper. And that's the kind of stuff that I endured and lived through. And I survived that, you know. And today I care. I care about people. And that goes right back to that tradition 10, where I don't have an opinion outside issue. Because of that, I have been an example, good or bad, that we do recover. I've helped. I know three KKK members from the Clovis Klan that I met through Alcoholics Anonymous that I sponsored when I lived in Fresno. I always say it wrong, but it's Peckerwoods. I always say Woodpecker, but I know a couple of Peckerwoods, you know. And it says in the Big Book, Chapter 2, it normally we would not mix. But if anyone, you know, I don't care what your ideas are about gay people or people of color, the prejudice you have, because you talk about prejudice, get me going, you know. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to help another suffering alcoholic or addict. I don't want to see somebody die, and people die from this disease. I had amazing friends of mine, and I was angry at God. I went through survivor's guilt about 15, 16 years ago. Because I was angry at God, because I had friends dying. I said, damn it, you know, you're a white guy, and you have every opportunity in life. You know, you've had this, even the opportunity for recovery, and they still would go out and shoot up one more time, or... the pain, the emotional pain. And how I get through it, I call somebody. You know, I go to a meeting. I stay active. I stay involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. Even when I don't want to be sometimes, because I also have anxiety. So doing this is a big deal for me. I do this more for me than anybody else. I've done 12-step calls. I did H&I, which is hospital institution work. I did that for over 15 years. I did it for 7-8 years in Fresno County. And when I moved here, I did it for 6 years, going to your Bob Wiley and this jail here. I went to the Carruthers Institution, where I was institutionalized before, about 3 times. I carried the message there till they closed. And when they closed, we went to the Miramonte prison, and it was wonderful going in there, hearing that clank, you know, because I knew I was coming out, you know. So I've done. I stay involved, you know. And there are times we'd be in those meetings, we'd drive 2.5 hours to a prison and be one guy there. And I've always told other people, where two or more gathered, God is present. The God of my understanding, my Creator, is there for us to together. We can walk through this together. It's a we program. And if anyone can be an example, good or bad, I am, that we do recover from a seemingly hopeless disease. it baffles me when I want to figure it out sometimes, you know, why I'm still here. I just, every morning I have a routine. When I wake up, like my sponsor told me, it's not when you come to, it's when you wake up, you make your bed, brush your teeth, read your books, say your prayers. And what I do, I sit down on my patio, I face east, and I talk to my Creator. I say my my traditional language. And I'm so grateful, because one of them is about being thanking Him for another day, to keeping me humble, keeping me right size. You know, is that about look good or sound good? You know, I'm doing this more for me. Hopefully for somebody out there too that gets it. And I mentioned this in meetings, you know, that all my 12-step calls have been a success because I'm still sober. And that means a lot to me, because there were people that 12-stepped me and I'm still sober. And I know quite a few of those people from my original home group, those are still alive, they're still sober. My current sponsor, she has 45 years, and she was in the meeting when I first walked into the Fresno Fellowship. And she's known me all this time. She was one of the bitches I didn't like. Didn't like her. Didn't like her. She was mean to me. You know, but I love that woman. I really do. And the thing about when I'm going to bring this up, you know, when sharing and caring about others, you know, I hear people say, oh, you know, men sponsor men, women sponsor women. I think, shit, where does that leave me? You know, what the hell? So what I've found is if it's not in the big book, you need a preference. You know, say my opinion is or my experience is. But if it's in the big book, there's a chapter, there's a page, there's something that people can reference, because that's where I have found my answers to living. The first 164 pages, you hear that, Principles for Four Personalities? The first 164 pages, when you read the big book, when you go and find a book study, you'll find the spiritual principles of this program. And in the back are the stories of the personalities. And I get, Principles for Personalities. I get that, yeah. And, you know, and when I read those stories and I get to listen to those stories, my story is in print again and again and again, you know. I'm not here because I don't have anything better to do on a Wednesday night. I'm here so I don't drink. I'm here so I don't use. I'm here so I don't hurt somebody else. And I hope, my hope, and that's what this program is, that hope, that acronym for hope, hearing other people's experiences, you know, I have hope for tomorrow. You know, I don't have to like, oh, what's going on for Saturday? I can stay in today, because I've cleaned pretty much a lot of the wreckage in my past. The promises do come true. Today, you know, I can honestly say I retired about 9 years ago. I'm buying a little three-bedroom condo here in town. I'm fortunate enough to have one of my six sisters living with me because she's going through a divorce. Her husband is drinking again after coming out of prison from killing somebody from drinking and driving. And they've been married over 30-some years, 36 years, something like that. But he's active in his disease. This disease doesn't care. So, like I said, I mentioned it to my sponsees. I said, you know, pick a subject if you want to talk about something with me, because I've gone through a lot. I've been through a lot. And again, it's not about look good or sound good. It's about saving my ass today, because you don't want me drinking. You know. When I was in college, I was told to cut my hair by a white man. I remember it was Professor Sandy Sanders. And he said, because I went for my business administration degree. And he said, if you want to make it in business, he goes, you need to cut your hair, wear a white shirt, blue pants, black shoes, matching belt. So I did what the white man said. And I was resentful to that man. I drank over it, used drugs over it, and I lasted about, I was in my third semester in college when I had to get away. And I said, I'll come back. Well, it took me 12 years to go back to school, but I had to get it out of my system. But I was following orders even at that time and suggestions. And that's what they are in these rooms too. They're just suggestions, you know. But I know these suggestions today have enabled me to live an amazing life. I travel today. I remember my trips. I don't have to come to someplace else. I've been to Europe. I've been to Europe twice, one time for 3 months, another time 2 months, and I speak Hrvatska, which is Croatian, and I look forward to going there next year again. I've spoken German. I've tried to speak French, but that was kind of foo-foo. When I was in college, I spoke conversational Chinese because I met some guys from Red China. I thought they were fascinating, funny guys. So I would teach them Spanish, and they were teaching me Chinese. But I could catch on to languages very well. Well, the same thing applied to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I can apply what applies to me. It's that whole buffet of information, you know. And I always mention this, and people hear me say that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is the best soap opera in the world. Keep coming and see people's lives change, and it's hopefully for the better. And it has been for me. Because when I have bad days or bad experiences, whatever, I have amazing men, and some of them are in this room right now, that I can call and share that with. You know, because when you divide something, I don't have to carry the whole load. And I learned that in these rooms, and I'm still learning. I'm still learning, I'm still growing. I'm 59, I'll be 60 pretty soon, and I'm grateful for every day. And if I've made sense about anything, please, you know, just stay involved in this program. Get a sponsor. I have a home group, a core group of men and women. Like I said, not everybody needs to know your stuff, but a core group of, you know, 4 to 7 people that know everything about you. So, because a sponsor is just someone to guide you through the steps, you know, share you their experience. And if they say, oh, you know, this stuff that's not in the big book, it's not in the big book, you know, call them on it. You know, because the steps are for the individual as the traditions are for the group. And that's what keeps this program safe and strong for the newcomer that's yet to come through that door. And I want to thank each and every one of you, and anyone who's new or relatively new, or someone who thinks you're so different or that you don't belong here. If you had a drinking problem or drug problem, well, I don't like when they say that in the book, you know, our hats are off to you. You know, I don't like, just stay. Because if anyone has seen anyone die of this disease, which I have, it's horrible. It's a horrible thing to see someone die of cirrhosis of the liver. And I talked about my friend Anthony Sotelo, who had 7 years of sobriety and relapsed. And he looked like the big bird on Sesame Street before he died. He was so yellow and distended. And he was an amazing, gorgeous German, Italian man. And this disease doesn't care what you look like, where you're from, who you are. If you have kids, if you don't, you know, or your opinion, like opinions are assholes, everyone's got one, you know. This disease doesn't care. I care today. I care for all of you, whether you believe it or not. I will be there for you if you need help. At middle of the night, I had a call last night at 3:10 in the morning from a guy I just met recently. He was surprised I even answered the phone. I said, lack of sleep ain't going to kill me. You know, I'm retired. I took 2 naps yesterday. I said, I have an amazing life today because of this simple program. I really do. And if you want to be a long timer, don't drink, don't use, don't die. Stay involved in the hurt. Thank you so much for this opportunity to share. Thank you.